We're studying on Wednesday nights a class we started last week on helping wayward sheep come home, and we just introduced that kind of in a general way last week with some realities that we need to face and to think of as we approach this particular subject. It is stated that if we do not learn from the past, what's bound to happen? We're destined to repeat it. If we don't learn from the past, well, all of a sudden it's going to come around and repeat itself. Or somebody might say, what goes around comes around. Well, so how good of a job generally do we do of learning from our past, learning from history? We probably don't do that great of a job because we keep using that same expression, if we don't learn from the past, we're destined to repeat it. Why do we keep using that statement? Because apparently we're not always doing a great job of learning from the past. And perhaps there are some things that are going on in our world and in our nation right now that is evidence of that. But when you read through the Bible, does God ever make use of history to prove a point? Does God ever remind his people of things that had happened to them to say, remember this? Let's not do this again. Did he ever help them to understand why certain things occurred and to see the consequences of how those things came about? Did God ever establish memorials to help them to remember things of the past? Can you think of any memorials that God established to help them to remember? What was it? Yes, taking the rocks out of the river bed and taking them up and piling them up on the other side. Joshua chapter 4. If your children should ask, what is this all about? It's an intentional memorial. What else? What other kind of memorials did he set up? Lord's Supper is a memorial to help us to remember. The rainbow is to help us to remember. The Passover for the Jews was to help them to remember what event? Not a hard question. The Passover was an event and a memorial to help them to remember what event? Some of you are making this a longer answer than I was looking for. To help them remember the Passover. And what transpired in Exodus chapters 12 through 14. So God intentionally put some things in place to help his people to remember the past, to help them to remember events in history so that they would learn from them. Turn your Bibles to 1 Corinthians chapter 10. And we're going to spend some time tonight, and as I mentioned last week, what we're doing in this particular class on helping wayward sheep to return home is we're going to spend the first few classes looking, and all of this is going to be just looking at biblical texts, different passages. But looking at different passages in these first few classes, see, why do people fall away? Why do sheep wander away? And so those will be the first few classes. And the last few sessions of the class will be, okay, what can we do to help them to return? So gaining an understanding of the why at the beginning and then the how at the end. So 1 Corinthians chapter 10. In this particular passage, God is writing to some New Testament Christians, but he is reflecting on some events that transpired back in the Old Testament. Were the Jews a special people to God? He called them a special people, didn't he? I mean, did they choose God or did he choose them? They didn't choose him. He chose them to be his own special people. Did he choose them because they were the greatest and the biggest and the mightiest of all the people? That's why he chose them, right? They were the prettiest. They had the most money. Any of those reasons? No, there wasn't. None of those reasons had anything to do with why God chose them. He chose them out of love for these people in order that he might bring his son into the world and to save all of mankind. And yet, did God's people, even though they were chosen and they were loved and they were special to him, did they have trouble remaining faithful to him? You think about that and you think, how could that happen? I mean, what we're going to read about here in 1 Corinthians chapter 10 tonight, what we're going to read about is God's people who were delivered out of Egypt. Do you think that was a memorable occasion and event? Do you think the 10 plagues were things that you would remember? Yeah. Do you think crossing the Red Sea on dry ground would that stick? Are there certain things in your life you don't necessarily remember very well? There are some people, like Dan Jenkins, who can tell you everything about their kindergarten teacher, their first grade teacher, second grade teacher. I can't remember my kindergarten teacher. I love teachers, but are there certain things in your life you can't remember very well? Certain events? Would you think that the 10 plagues would be something that would stick? I mean, do you have a hard time remembering your anniversary? Certain birthdays? It was like you forget them. Would you forget crossing the Red Sea on dry ground? Would that be something that would get lodged in there somehow? And yet, what did these people do? They forgot. 1 Corinthians chapter 10, beginning verse 1. Moreover, brethren, writing to Christians, I don't want you to be unaware that... I want you to look at words in these first few verses. I do not want you to be unaware that... What word do you have after that? It depends on your translation, but I'm looking for a little word that starts with A and has a double L at the end. All. Was that clear enough for you, Jaggy? All right. To be unaware that all our fathers were under the cloud, comma. What's the next word? It's the same word as we had before, in case you're wondering. All passed through the sea. Verse 2. What's the first word? All were baptized into Moses in the cloud and the sea. Verse 3. All ate the same spiritual food. Verse 4. And all drank the same spiritual drink. So, what's God's point by using the word all five times in four verses? Which of God's children did He bless and care for and take care of all the way through this process? You got the answer. All of them. For they drank, verse 4, of that spiritual rock that followed them, and that rock was Christ. What's the first word you have in verse 5? Uh-oh. So God took care of how many of them in the first four verses? All of them. First word of verse 5? Uh-oh. But. But with... Do you have the word all again in verse 5? Oh, you've got the word most or the word many. Is that different than all? Many or most is different than all. But with most, many of them, God was not well pleased. Flip that around. Does that mean He was displeased with all of them? So that means there were some He was pleased with. Would you get that idea? A few? That's a New Testament word, right? A few? How many of those 12 spies that Moses sent into the Promised Land, how many of them ended up entering the Promised Land? Two out of 12. Joshua and Caleb. That's a few, right, Jackie? But it wasn't all that He was displeased with, but most of them He was displeased with. For their bodies, verse 5 says, were scattered in the wilderness. So what I want us to do tonight is I want us to look at this passage, because what did they do to have God to not be well pleased with them? Verse 6 says, these things became our, what? Examples. So whatever happened, in to change it from all of them were taken care of, and then but most or many of them He was displeased with, whatever happened is there for our example. Look in verse 11. All of these things happened to them as what? You have the word examples again in verse 11? I've got the word examples in verse 6, and I've got the word examples in verse 11. So I think God is telling us in this text there are some things for us to learn from the example of these Old Testament characters for us to take and to apply to our lives. And what I think is interesting is that when we look at verse 7, 8, 9, and 10, there are four problems that we're going to see that these followers of God faced that are the same kind of problems we face today. What caused them to fall away? What caused them to turn against God? What caused them, the terminology about sheep, to wander away from where they were? He gives us four things in these verses that caused this to happen. And as we go through this, it starts to get really personal as you kind of look at what was it that caused them to wander away. Verse 7 is the first one. Idolatry caused them to wander away. Look in verse 7. And do not become idolaters, as were... Do you have the word all in verse 7? Oh, you've got the word some. So he uses the word all, and then God uses the word most or the word many. But when we get down to verse 7, 8, 9, and 10, now it's the word some. Some of God's people became idolaters. Now, hold your finger, or put a piece of paper, or put a $20 bill or something right here in 1 Corinthians chapter 10. Go back to the book of Numbers. And we're going to kind of bounce back and forth between the book of Numbers chapter 25 for this. We're going to kind of bounce back and forth between 1 Corinthians chapter 10 and the book of Numbers, because that's kind of what's being referenced. What's being referenced in 1 Corinthians chapter 10 are some events that were transpiring. Now think about the book of Numbers and where we're going here. We're going to Numbers chapter 25. When we come to Numbers chapter 25, we are entering into the last chapters of the book of Numbers. When you read the latter half of the book of Numbers, generally speaking, where are God's people? They are wandering in the wilderness. Why are they wandering in the wilderness? Are they on vacation? They're sightseeing, right? They're making scrapbooks of all of the wonderful sights. Because of their disobedience, they could not enter the promised land, and they were sent into the wilderness for 40 years. Now, why did they have to go into the wilderness for 40 years? Well, for a multitude of reasons. But I want you to imagine that you are in the wilderness. Would you be upset if you were wandering the wilderness for 40 years? Let's see, we could be in the promised land, or we could be here. Which one you want? I think I'd take the promised land. Would you be upset with those 10 spies who came back and ruined it for everybody else? Were they the only ones who refused to go into the promised land? No, not the only ones. They just led the way. So would you be a little upset when you're having hundreds and thousands of funerals every day? Would you be a little upset with what's going on when you're wandering around? Would you have made up your mind, you know what? I'm never going to do that again. Never going to turn my back on God again. Would you have done that? I don't know. I just think I would have done that. Look at Numbers chapter 25. Israel remained in Acacia Grove, and the people began to commit harlotry with the women of Moab. We'll come back to that. They invited the people to the sacrifices of their gods, and the people ate and bowed to their gods. Hello, what's going on? Hey, come over here. We're having a feast and a worship assembly. Come and bow down to our gods. No, sir. I'm going to serve my God, because I want to get into the promised land. Is that what they did? Oh, yay, let's go over here. Let's worship idols. So they didn't know that it was wrong to worship idols, right? They had never seen with their own eyes a piece of stone that had etched in it with God's finger, "Thou shalt have no other gods before me." They didn't know that existed, right? Can you imagine? Can you imagine these individuals turning themselves over to idolatry? Was this the only time in Israel's history that they worshipped idols? No. Why did God allow them to be taken into Assyrian and Babylonian captivity? Because they worshipped idols. What's up with... Can you explain that? Can you explain why individuals who so clearly could see the power, the majesty of God, could turn around and worship an idol? Okay, I asked a question. There was a long pause. Apparently, we don't know. I mean, how could they do that? So now, here's the question for you. because we live in the 21st century, because we are New Testament Christians, it could never happen to us, right? We would never do that, right? Because we're more advanced. We know more than they do. What did they see? I mean, we are reading these things in the text. They saw it. And yet, they still turn and worship idols. Is that happening today? Darren? Right. And so if there's something that glitters, something that's glamorous, something that's shiny, and what about this? And it draws attention away. And so, you know, as Darren's saying, that is something that still happens today. You know, it is possible even for God's people today to become idolaters. Sherilyn, is that raising your hand? Yeah, that's true. And so, I mean, it's what Sherilyn is saying is that all sorts of things can become our idols if we allow them to become our idols, whether that's an actual figurine of an idol or whether that's, as she talks about, our social media accounts. There's a lot of things. And so what do you do to your gods? What do you do to your idols? You sacrifice things. You know, you sacrifice your time. You sacrifice sometimes your money. Sometimes it involves sacrificing even our own values in order to have something else. We'll have up there in a second the Colossians chapter 3 where God says covetousness is what? You know Colossians 3 and verse 5? Covetousness is idolatry. We don't think that. But when you let those words settle in for a minute, you say, yeah, that's right. Has anybody ever sacrificed anything at the feet of materialism? Have they ever sacrificed their family? Have they ever sacrificed their livelihood? Have they ever sacrificed whatever it may be in order to have a greater education, to have a bigger business, to earn more money? Folks sacrifice all sorts of values and valuable things, people, in order to obtain, as Darren was talking about, something that's tangible. We like things that glitter and just things that are nice and tangible and things for me to touch. Is that possible to get? Well, surely not today a Christian could be led away by that, right? Could that happen? Where do we place our value? How do we value people? Well, they don't have a very nice car. And so we make a judgment about somebody based upon what kind of car. Oh, well, look at their clothes. They got really nice clothes. Wow. Those are real. And so maybe our estimation of somebody may go up or down based upon what they kind of clothes they wear, what kind of car they drive. Really? That's how we place a value on somebody? Does that happen? Happens all the time, doesn't it? So, as Christians, is it possible that we could fall into the same trap that these Jews did all that time ago? Still possible. And so, do we have to be on guard to recognize that if this could happen to people who saw the power of God at work, who understood the very word of God because some of it was written on a piece of stone that they were carrying around in a golden ark, and yet they still said, no, I'm going to allow myself to be distracted towards these other things. Could that happen to us? Are there any Christians today who have fallen away because they have fallen into the trap of idolatry? Unfortunately, yeah. Come back to 1 Corinthians chapter 10 and verse 12. If we sit here tonight and say, no, 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 not me, that can never happen to me, what does verse 12 say? To him who thinks he stands, take heed lest he fall. Don't become so haughty and confident that we lose our need to be cautious and aware of things that are happening around us. So, first thing he mentions in verse 7. First thing that caused some of those Jews to fall away, and it's the very thing that can cause some Christians today to fall away, was idolatry. Look in verse 8, where he mentions a second thing, immorality. Nor let us commit sexual immorality as how many of them? Some. So we don't have all. It's some of them did, and in one day, 23,000 fell. Well, what's that all about? Go back to Numbers chapter 25. You got your finger over there. We saw it in verse 1. Israel remained in Acacia Grove, Numbers 25, verse 1, and the people began to commit harlotry with the women of Moab. And so you read through this, and they are worshiping idols. They are worshiping their gods. Boy, that sounds a whole lot like what Solomon ended up doing several years later, doesn't it? You get down to verse 6. And indeed, one of the children of Israel came and presented to his brethren a Midianite woman in the sight of Moses and in the sight of all the congregation of the children of Israel who were weeping at the door of the tabernacle of meeting. We read that and we think that is so innocent. And that is God's way of hiding from us the vileness of what this individual did in the midst of the brethren with this Moabite woman. Well, what was he doing? Verse 1 tells us what he was doing. He was committing harlotry with this Midianite, with this foreigner, right? Not outside of the camp, inside of the camp. That's how far and these individuals had fallen from God. Verse 7, when Phinehas, the son of Eleazar, the son of Aaron, the priest, saw it. Saw what? Saw that he was hanging out with the... No. Saw the harlotry, saw the sexual immorality that was happening. Then what did he do? He rose, verse 7, from among the congregation. He took a javelin in his hand, and he went after the man of Israel into the tent and thrust both of them through, the man of Israel and the woman through her body. I wonder what they were doing that he could get both of them in one thrust. So the plague was stopped among the children of Israel. And those who died in the plague were 24,000. Is this the same event that we just read about in 1 Corinthians chapter 10? What was 1 Corinthians chapter 10 talking about? Don't commit sexual immorality as some of them did. Somebody says, no, 1 Corinthians 10 says 23,000, this says 24,000. What does 1 Corinthians 10 say? 23,000 fell when? In one day. What does verse 9 say over here in Numbers chapter 25? The number who died in the plague was 24,000. Is that a contradiction? No. 23,000 died in one day. When you total up everybody who died from the plague, it was 24,000 total. It's not. Don't let somebody say, oh, it's a contradiction. It's not a contradiction. But this is talking about God's people giving themselves over to sexual immorality to the point that 24,000 people died in a plague as a result of giving themselves over to sexual immorality. Well, God had never talked to them about sexual immorality before, right? They just didn't know. They didn't know you're supposed to save yourself for marriage, and once you're married, you keep sex within the marriage and only within the marriage. They just didn't know that, right? It's not as if God had taken his finger and written on a piece of stone anything about that, did he? Thou shalt not do what? Commit adultery. And yet, what are they doing? Committing adultery. Adultery, fornication. Fornication fits under the fornication is the umbrella term that includes adultery and homosexuality and all other illicit forms of sexual intercourse, and that's an important word to understand. When we talk about fornication, when we talk about adultery, it is not just somebody having thoughts about somebody else. The word explicitly is talking about intercourse taking place between individuals who do not have a right to be doing that. So what does this have to do with Corinth, though? God, why are you talking about this to New Testament Christians? New Testament Christians wouldn't get involved in anything like this, right? He's writing it to Christians in the city of Corinth. Corinth was known. If there was one reputation that Corinth had, it was for fornication. They had a lot of things that they had a reputation for, but if they had anything at the top, It was fornication. So think about this. Here is a city that was given over to idolatry and a city that was given over to fornication. Do those two things sometimes go together? Idolatry, fornication. Do those have anything to do with each other? It's interesting when you're reading in 1 Corinthians chapter 6, when he says in verse 9, "Do you not know that the unrighteous will not inherit the kingdom of God?" And he starts listing sins. And what does he include right there at the beginning of the list, back to back? Idolaters and adulterers. Oh, those are two separate, well, they are two separate, they are two separate sins. But do they have anything to do with each other? When somebody turns their back on God, when somebody turns their back on their faith in God, what's holding them back anymore from having sex with anybody that they want to have sex with? There's nothing that is triggering their conscience to keep them from engaging in sexual immorality, because what? They have turned away from the God to serve some other god, idolatry, whatever that god may be. And because of that, they fall into idolatry. So, come back to 1 Corinthians. Darren mentioned this a few minutes ago. What do we read in 1 Corinthians chapter 5? What had come into the Lord's church? Sexual immorality in the church. No, it wouldn't happen among the Christians. It did. And what were their thoughts about it? Were they like, "Oh, we shouldn't be doing this. We shouldn't be allowing this in the church." Is that what they were doing? No. Paul says in 1 Corinthians chapter 5, he says that should be your reaction. But New King James says in verse 2, you are puffed up rather than mourning about it. Somebody says, "What's wrong? What's going on?" Because what world did they live in? We're supposed to be in the world, but not of the world. Boy, that's easy to say and hard to do. Here were these Christians who had come out of the world. Is it sometimes hard to unlearn some things that you knew when you were in the world? Okay, so that was the reason. It was because they were Christians who had that in their background. But if somebody's brought up in the church, they would never turn to that kind of life, right? Unfortunately, no. That's why God is warning these Christians to not be impacted by the environment that is around them. What does he say about sexual immorality in 1 Corinthians chapter 5? It's like a little leaven that leavens the whole lump. You let this go, and it influences the entirety of the church. And so, is this something that can still happen to us today? Unfortunately, it is. Is our world a world that is given over to sexual immorality? Can you get away from it? Is it easy to get away from today? I'm not talking about engaging in it. I'm just talking about the bombardment of sexual immorality. Is it easy to get away from? You can't hardly turn on anything today without something being thrown in your face. I don't know if you trust the CDC or not, but the CDC says that one out of every five Americans has a STD, sexually transmitted disease. One out of every five. That number surprise you? You might think it's low. You might think that's probably not close enough. Why is that? Because that's the world that we are living in. We are living in an anti-God world where we are bombarded with that in media and in entertainment all around us. And so it is normalized. Is it normalized for your kids in school? Is immorality normal? I mean, it's just normal? Unfortunately, they turn on the television. Can you hardly watch any television shows today where there are not two individuals, whether it's male or female or same sex or not? Can you watch any television show today where there's, or movie today, where there's two individuals who are not married to each other, but they are engaging in sex. Can you watch anything that's not going to have that happening? No. It's all over. It's not just normalized, it is glorified. It's not just that, oh yeah, everybody's doing this. They're saying, wow, you need to, this is wonderful. Can that impact us? Can that get into our hearts and affect our lives? Corinth was known for its immorality. I wonder if America is no. Oops, let me go back a second. I wonder if America is known for its immorality. Is that possible? I mean, we're probably known for a lot of things. In the city of Corinth, immorality had even become like a practiced religion. Surely that would never happen in America, right? We're a Christian nation. That wouldn't happen with us. Idolatry, immorality, are these reasons that Christians can fall away today? Yeah. Have Christians fallen away because of these things? Yes. Do we need to say, oh, well, it wouldn't happen to me? What does verse 12 say back in 1 Corinthians chapter 10? Him who thinks he stands, take heed lest he fall. All right, come back to 1 Corinthians chapter 10. Verse 7, we read about idolatry that caused some of them to fall. Verse 8, we read about sexual immorality that caused some of them to fall. Verse 9, we read about insolence that caused some of them to fall. Verse 9, nor let us tempt Christ, as some, not all, as some of them also tempted and were destroyed by serpents. You remember that story? Remember God's people being destroyed by serpents? Where's that? Back in the book of Numbers. Go back to Numbers chapter 21. Numbers chapter 21. What is God saying that they were doing? He is saying that they were tempting Christ. That's the New Testament explanation for what they were doing in Numbers chapter 21. Well, what does that mean? What does insolence mean? Insolence just is talking about a prideful and haughty attitude towards God. Is that what they were doing in Numbers chapter 21? Look in verse 5. Numbers 21, verse 5. The people spoke against who? Whoa. Is that prideful and haughty? You speak against God. Oh, okay. Well, what did they say? Maybe it was something innocent, right? Why have you brought us up out of Egypt to die in the wilderness? For there is no food and no water, and our soul loathes this worthless bread. That's kind of innocent, right? Wow. You might read that and say, well, why have you, it's a lowercase y, and so they're talking to Moses. No, it says they spoke against God. It might as well be a capital Y on the U. God, why have you brought us out here? They were tempting Christ, is what it says in 1 Corinthians chapter 10. They were speaking against God, questioning His goodness and bringing them out there, doubting His wisdom, doubting His providence to take care of them. Had they ever been told not to do that? Had God ever talked to them about being careful to not allow themselves to become prideful in their own ways? Deuteronomy 6 was just one such passage where they were told, don't you think that when you go along this way that everything you have, that you've done it for yourself. God has provided these things for you. But this was only a problem back then, right? Couldn't happen today. Being haughty, prideful, having that kind of an attitude against God. Not New Testament Christians, right? Is that something that could happen to us today? What could that look like? If we were to take this concept of tempting Christ, we were to take this concept of why have you done this, God? Why have you done this to us? Does anybody have that same kind of thing today? Or is there anybody who ever blames God for things that happen in their life? Is that any different than what was happening here? They were blaming God. They were not just blaming God, they were doubting God. Where's the food? Where's the water? Oh, this, where's the food? Yeah, God says right here, I'm giving you food every day. Oh, we hate that bread. Really? Blaming God, doubting that God can or will work things out for our good. Any New Testament Christians ever question whether God even cares? Where is God? Why would God even let this happen? Can I suggest to you that if we ever go down this path where we are calling out God and blaming God and saying, why did God do this and why did God do that? Can I suggest to you that the word on the next line that I'm going to put on the screen is the answer? That it is not God to whom we ought to be blaming. And yet, who is the one deceiving us into casting all of this at God's feet? The devil makes us feel like we are big enough to tempt Christ, to test Christ. The devil makes us feel like we're big enough to foolishly charge God for things that, for the all of the bad things that happen. And the devil will get us so discouraged in our faith that we will forget some of the most fundamental things, like God so loved the world that He gave His own Son for me. We'll forget all about that because we're angry about something that's happening. We will lose sight of the big picture because the devil has taken our eyes off of God and His grace and has caused us to elevate ourselves above that. Was there a guy named Job who ever endured anything? Did he deal with any pain and suffering? Job 13, verse 15. You know this verse in Job 13, 15. Though he slay me, yet will I trust him. Was God slain, to use his word, was God slain Job? The answer is no. The devil was the one doing it, but I want you to think about Job's faith. Job's faith was, even if it was God slaying me, I will still trust him. Now, those are easy words to say, right? That's an easy thing to put on a magnet and put it on your refrigerator. If you still have one of those refrigerators you can put magnets on. Some of these new refrigerators you can't put magnets on are like wrong. But it's a nice thing to put on a magnet, put it on a bumper sticker, you know, put it on a sticky note on your computer. Though he slay me, yet will I trust him. Is that a harder thing to live? Yeah. Do I need to be careful myself that I don't allow myself to tempt Christ and to lay blame for things at God's feet? Very, very briefly, we've only got 3 minutes. Come back to 1 Corinthians chapter 10. Last thing, and this one's interesting. I mean, you think about immorality and idolatry, and those are the big sins, right? And then you get down to verse 10, and he's talking about ingratitude. Oh, that's not that big of a deal. Well, it's listed right here. He says in verse 10, nor complain. Well, is that a big deal? As some of them also complained and were destroyed by the destroyer. Ouch. Did the Israelites ever complain? Did they ever not complain? Maybe we'll ask it that way. Did they ever not complain? I mean, every time you turned around, you're reading about them complaining against God. Well, fortunately, mankind got that out of their system, and we don't suffer with anything like that today, right? Well, if you're a parent, you know that's not true. If you've got kids, you know that's not true. Fortunately, though, when we grow into adulthood, the complaining and the griping and the murmuring ceases. No? Okay. Doesn't disappear. Still something that we can struggle with today. Is it possible that right at the very base of some of our sins against God is an ingratitude for not recognizing what He's given me? Not being thankful. It's interesting in 2 Timothy chapter 3, in one of those listings of sins, that God lists being unthankful. What? Richard? Yeah. Yeah. Even other religions, Richard says, recognize the virtue of gratitude, and yet other religions, do they have anything for which to be thankful like we do as Christians? Absolutely not. Here we are as Christians that have everything in the world to be thankful for, and yet sometimes do we lose sight of that? Would it help us as Christians, and we got to close because the bell's going to ring, would it help us as Christians to remain faithful? Would it help us as Christians to not stray away, to not wander away from God? Would it help us to not do that if we would learn to be more grateful? If every day, John talked about a little while ago in the invitation, talked about the sun coming up this morning. If every day we learn to find things to be thankful for, would that change our outlook? Some of you have a gratitude journal where you keep track of things every day to be thankful for. Does that help you? You better believe it helps you. Some of you have a complaint encyclopedia that you have multiple volumes of, that you have filled them up, and you've got to buy a new house for all of those new volumes. We can complain like nobody else. Say again. Yes, there are many people who would love to take our place. 1 Corinthians chapter 10 says we've got to learn from the examples of those who have gone before us, and let him who thinks he stands take heed lest he fall. What a passage. So much there to unpack and to look at. Y'all haven't rung the bell, or I haven't heard it, and so I am expressing gratitude and thankfulness. I am thankful that you have not rung the bell, but we probably should ring it now. Thank you all very much for your good attention tonight.